Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. I'm happy to have with us this week Chris Corzin. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Tim.
Chris is the co-author of A Nation for All, How the Catholic Vision of the Common Good Can Save America from the Politics of Division. And Chris also works for Catholics United, correct?
That's right, yes. I'm the director of Catholics United.
Maybe you can just describe that group for us before we talk about the book.
Sure. Catholics United is a national, primarily online advocacy group that helps put Catholics in touch with their elected officials and, you know, helps have a voice for Catholics in the public square around social justice issues. We have about 20,000 members across the country right now, and they're concerned with things like war and poverty, the environment, finding some real solutions to the abortion problem in our country, and moving past this divisive political rhetoric that we've, you know, been subjected to for the past several years and toward some real solutions to the challenges that face us as a nation.
Now, this grew out of the Catholic Voting Project, which you were part of in 2004. Maybe you can talk about that.
Sure. The Catholic Voting Project started because we wanted to help promote a document from the U.S. Catholic bishops called Faithful Citizenship. Put this out every 4 years ahead of the presidential election, and the 2003 version spoke about a number of issues that the bishops felt Catholics should be considering in the election. It ran everywhere from abortion and stem cell research to poverty, international development, the environment, issues like that, and there were about 50 of them that they cited. So it was a deep and broad look at Catholic social teaching. We found, unfortunately, that as the election season progressed, there was what seemed to be a very organized effort to suppress some Catholic teachings on the part of, you know, what really amounted to partisan organizations with no affiliation to the church institution. So we wanted to help promote, you know, what our church actually taught about Catholic political engagement, and took Faithful Citizenship and turned it into a voting guide. This was a number of folks that I had worked with in the Catholic social justice movement previously, and we spent the summer just building this website and launched it in August of 2004. It really turned out to be a one-of-a-kind project. There weren't an awful lot of organizations and folks out promoting the fullness of the faith, and we found that it was so successful that after the election, we wanted to keep the work going. So that's why we incorporated Catholics United in 2006.
Now, your co-author is Alexia Kelly, who she's involved with the Alliance for the Common Good, is that the correct
name? It's Catholics and Alliance for the Common Good, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Alexia had a similar experience in 2004, as did, you know, many folks that we work with now. What happened was in about, in the early months of 2005, a number of Catholic social justice leaders came together to talk about ways that we could all work as a coordinated movement to increase the profile of Catholic social justice issues and Catholic social teaching. So Catholics and Alliance and Catholics United were born of that. But we also work, you know, as a movement with a number of other organizations like NETWORK, which is a National Catholic Social Justice Lobby out of Washington, Pax Christi USA, several religious orders like the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, groups like that. So there's about 20 or 30 different Catholic organizations that are really working closely together now. And this work that we've been doing for the past 4 years is about to culminate in a couple of weeks at the Convention for the Common Good in Philadelphia.
I think we will address that maybe after we talk about your book, but I should mention that Alexia Kelly co-wrote an article for America on the notion of the common good and what it can bring to the political process and to this country that appeared, I believe, this year or late last year. So we'll put up a link to that so you folks can have a read. Now, let's talk about the book, How the Catholic Vision of the Common Good Can Save America from the Politics of Division. Now, what do you folks mean by the politics of division?
Well, again, this kind of emerges from our experience in 2004 and beyond, that we found instead of using the principles of the Catholic faith or religion in general as ways to unite Americans around, you know, solutions to the challenges we face as a country, we saw that religion was being used to divide voters. And it's not just religion, it's this broader political paradigm that we've been subjected to, where voters and Americans are put into boxes. They're called Republicans and Democrats, or liberals and conservatives. And, you know, as we're pigeonholed into these political categories, we're losing sight of our common identity. So the politics of division is that which seeks to focus on what distinguishes our, sorry, what divides us as Americans, our differences, really, and not our commonalities. And, you know, we say that along with this comes what we're calling the culture of going it alone, that instead of focusing on building a society in which everybody can benefit, we've really become accustomed to just worrying about ourselves. And this has become, too much of a defining characteristic of what it means to be American. So we're trying to bring our country back to a sense of togetherness and what we're calling a nation for all.
Yeah, that's an interesting tension that you write about in your book. The American ideal of self-reliance, you kind of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. But you also point out that there is the tradition of rallying around a common cause, supporting one another. You know, the New Deal, a great example of a time where people, the government was active in trying to help individuals who were in difficult situations. So there is that tension in American society that, unlike Europe, for example, America, for whatever reason, has that tradition of doing it on your own. So it's hard to capture that in some ways.
Sure, and it is a tension. I think it's a healthy tension. And I'm, very much a supporter of personal responsibility and, our duty to take care of ourselves. And we're not here advocating a welfare state where, the government just takes care of everybody and that's the end of it. What I think we've lost is the sense of that tension. That in addition to, pursuing our own interests in a society, we need to look at what collectively we can accomplish. And that's what we call the common good. It means making sure that people have health care. It means addressing poverty. It means building a society in which everybody can benefit and not just the few. And I think when the individual is put forth, as someone who just has his or own personal concerns to the exclusion of what benefits everyone, we really suffer as a society. And this is the essence of the Catholic social message, in a sense. We are in it together and not going it alone.
It's interesting. The notion of the common good is one that's been around for a long time in Catholic teaching. But you're starting to hear it more these days. And for whatever reason, the notion that we should look out for more than just ourselves is becoming part of the language you hear in some of the campaigns. So it might be the right time for this message.
I think so. And I think that Americans in general are tired of the culture of going it alone and the politics of division that goes along with it. They're hungry for real solutions to the problems we all face as a society. And they want solutions that focus on bringing people together around ideas that we can all support rather than, this my way or the highway approach that sometimes characterizes American politics.
Now, you talk about the common good in your book. You also talk about the Catholic social tradition, which you and I are familiar with. But as you point out in the book, it's something that not a lot of young Catholics in particular know much about. But it is something when they hear about it, they find it very attractive.
I think I had an experience that's sort of typical for a lot of Catholics these days. I grew up Catholic. I was an altar boy. I went to church every Sunday, but for some reason I wasn't really exposed to this body of thought called the Catholic social tradition. It wasn't until my senior year of college when I had to take a religious studies course in order to graduate from Holy Cross that I wound up finding out about this wonderful tradition we have that spans more than a century now, which really calls Catholics to engage their faith by engaging the problems of the world, to bringing this message of the common good to bear on social problems. So it's something that folks don't always understand when they think about Catholic teaching. It's not just about, our sacraments and what we do theologically or our religious practice. It really calls us to this deeper engagement here and now in the world.
Now, we're talking kind of in generalities now, but when we get down to the issues, of course, one of the thorniest ones is the abortion question, and that's the one that seems to have driven a lot of Catholics away from for example, the Democratic Party. Now, you mentioned it before, and you believe that there are other solutions than the ones perhaps that have been proposed. What are some of those ways of reducing abortions that maybe both parties could agree on?
Well, I think the reason why we've focused so much on abortion in this book is because it's a classic example of an issue in which most Americans are desperate for some common ground solutions and tired of the way that it's been used by extremists, in some cases on both sides, to divide voters. By some studies we've seen, two-thirds of women who seek an abortion say they do it because they feel they can't afford a baby. Catholics United did a study a couple of years ago using data from Kansas that showed in counties where there was lower unemployment, a higher degree of health care coverage, and more high Head Start centers, we actually had a demonstrably lower abortion rate. So there's a clear connection between the availability of healthcare services and the quality of the economy and abortion. And, you know, there's ways that we can come together to really solve this problem that unite Americans around common solutions. So that's the direction that we'd like to see that debate go.
Now, one of the critiques we sometimes get here at America when we write about this issue, sometimes on our blog, for example, is that essentially we're trying to find a way, or some of our bloggers are trying to find a way to, they're going to support the Democratic candidate. That's what they want to do. So they're kind of doing these mental and intellectual gymnastics to find a way to justify it. Obviously, that may be a cynical way of looking at it, but how would you respond to somebody who said that's the purpose of groups like this?
I guess I would say first and foremost that, you know, we're committed as an organization to supporting all the teachings of our church. So we're not here to challenge them. We're here to advance them. And it runs the gamut from a number of issues. We're looking at faithful citizenship and saying, how can we take this document in its entirety and apply it to, you know, our political discourse in this society? You know, where the issue of partisan politics comes in, I'd say again that this is part of the problem in our country, is that we've been divided into these categories of left and right and Republican and Democrat. I'm less interested in, you know, what party folks are trying to support than what they're going to do about the real problems that are facing our society right now. And we know what they are. It's the war in Iraq. It's the fact that Americans don't have health insurance. It's poverty, both domestically and globally. It is abortion. And, you know, again, we need to seek real solutions to that problem instead of using it as a wedge to divide voters.
Now, you mentioned faithful citizenship as the reason that one of the reasons you folks got involved in 2004. Bishops just released another document on faithful citizenship. Have you had a chance to review that? And what do you think it can offer to Catholics in this election cycle?
Sure. Well, we write about it in the book a bit, so we have had a chance to review mm-hmm. that, and I'm really happy with what the bishops have done with faithful citizenship this year. If I could back up a little bit.
Sure.
One of the reasons why Catholic teaching emerged as a wedge in the 2004 election, in addition to the fact that we had a Catholic candidate for president, the first one since John F. Kennedy in 1960, was because even though faithful citizenship offered this great look at the issues that were important for Catholics, many felt that it didn't really connect the dots between what those issues and what those concerns were and how actually to apply them in the election. And into that vacuum stepped a number of organizations that claim to be Catholic, but, you know, really were operating, we feel, more out of a partisan mindset. And they essentially were saying, no, that instead of, you know, all of these issues being important in the election, there's really just a handful that folks should be considering. Part of this analysis, you know, focused on trying to provide a formula for Catholic voters that didn't actually look at the outcome of their votes, and it didn't look at, you know, a sense of what the candidates would do to promote those values or those issues, really just focused on what the candidates said they would do or what they said they felt. So with the abortion issue, it had nothing to do with real solutions to abortion. It was just about, does this candidate pro-choice or pro-life? Do they believe abortion should be legal or illegal? You know, interesting theological argument, but really with not a lot of concern for the outcome of those policies. What 2007's version of faithful citizenship did, I think, was really sort of answer some of those questions. It gave Catholics more of a sense of how to use their judgment as Catholics, cast a more fully informed vote. And, you know, it talked about real solutions to the abortion debate, for example, and said that Catholics ought to be considering those things. So, you know, it's a step forward, I think, and we're pleased that the church is providing that kind of guidance for Catholics, because if they don't, really, the alternative is that outside organizations, really with no authority within the church institution, can step into that void.
Yes, you mentioned other institutions. We had a review in our most recent issue mentioning the 2004 election and the group Catholic Answers. And this is one example of a group that was handing out pamphlets and stuff at church saying these are the five kind of non-negotiable issues, abortion, gay marriage, among them. The bishops obviously have some authority, but there are these other groups out there which are also using the Catholic name, which is complicated. How closely do you work with, for example, the bishop's office in trying to get your message out?
Well, you know, we have some contacts with them, and this is more through Alexia's organization, Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good. Where Catholics United is concerned, I mean, we don't pretend to be an official mouthpiece of the Catholic Church. We're a group of Catholics who feel that our faith ought to be applied in the public sphere in this specific way. And we're offering what we call, you know, our prudential judgment, which is an important part of making any moral decision. You know, but it is our opinion. We're very vocal about that opinion and how we express it. But again, you know, we don't claim to be any official agency of the Catholic Church, which I think sets us apart from some of these other organizations that especially rose to prominence in 2004.
But you folks have not, you generally don't endorse a candidate or anything like that.
No, we haven't endorsed a candidate up to this point. We're considering possibly letting our membership endorse a candidate this time around, but again, it would be driven by the 20,000 members of Catholics United if we decided to go that route.
One thing that's come up in this election cycle is that you have groups like Catholics for Barack Obama, Catholics for John McCain. Do you think this is healthy to have Catholics making their stands and making their preferences known?
I think it's very healthy. However, I do feel that there's a danger of Catholic teaching again being used as a wedge to divide voters and to essentially say that there's only one acceptable moral choice in this election. In any election, there's no perfect candidate for Catholics, and we need to engage as a church and as a community in open and respectful and hopefully productive dialogue about how best to represent the values of our faith in that election. What I like to draw the line at groups saying that if you vote for this candidate or don't vote for this candidate, you should go to confession or not receive communion. We have heard some of that already in this election cycle, and I believe that's a grave misuse of the teachings of our church.
You talk about voting, and that's, of course, the crucial moment here. We can talk a lot about the importance of meeting others and finding common ground, but at some point you got to pull the lever from one side or the other. And you talk about in the book about how Catholics should go about doing that informing their conscience. Maybe you can talk about that.
That's right. You know, essentially the argument that we heard in 2004 was that there were five issues which this the group Catholic Answers called non-negotiable issues. And if a candidate had the wrong position on any of those five issues, it was immoral for a Catholic, according to this argument, to vote for that candidate. Our fear is that argument doesn't really consider the effect, the practical effects of what it means to cast a vote. You know, if we're only looking at what a candidate says they're going to do, or, you know, whether they fall into a pro-life or pro-choice category, or whether they're a Republican and Democrat, and not look at how their policies will actually address those issues, I think we're really falling short of the mandate to use our reason in ways that make the world a better place. So Catholics in Alliance in 2006 put out their own voting guide that really addressed that issue head on. And instead of just reducing our faith to a handful of moral concerns that are supposed to be valid at the ballot box, they put forth a process that, you know, it was a three-step process. It said, first, you need to inform your conscience about, you know, what our church teaches and how we feel about a number of important issues. The second step is to use what we call, or what the church calls, prudential judgment. And this is an important factor in any moral decision. It's taking the teachings of our church, it's taking a sense of what's right and wrong, and then applying it in practical ways to a given situation. And the final step would be to vote for the common good, that the most important thing we can do as Catholic citizens who are engaged in politics and who are voting is to think about how our vote's going to benefit everybody, not just us and not just a political agenda, but, you know, really the problems of all the world and especially the poor. And we feel that message has really caught on. We haven't heard much from Catholic Answers since 2004. And, you know, faithful citizenship, the U.S. Catholic Bishops document from 2007, really helps elucidate some of these concerns as well. So we're pleased at the way things are going. Again, this is shaping up to be potentially, you know, an acrimonious and divisive election. We hope that it doesn't. But, you know, we're being vigilant about our faith being used in ways that advance political agendas and not the common good.
Now, you mentioned the Common Good Conference, and maybe we can end by talking about that. This is taking place in Philadelphia later in July, correct?
Sure. It's July 11th through the 13th in Philadelphia. It's really the first time, I believe, that so many different representatives, delegates, really, from the Catholic social justice movement and the broader movement for social justice have come together to talk about what our concerns are and, you know, work in a coordinated way to advance those concerns within the context of our political discourse. So we're very excited about this. We oversold the convention. In fact, we were hoping for 600 folks. It's looking at more like we're going to have 700 delegates present. And, you know, invited representatives of the campaigns to attend as well.
And the goal of this conference is to start this process that you lay out in the book to bring people together to find common solutions?
Sure, and we've already been doing that work, you know, across the country in small group meetings. Catholics and other people of faith have gotten together to go through this process of identifying the issues that are important in their community and talking about some real solutions to them. And we've, you know, by we, I mean our broad movement, but particularly Catholics in Alliance and Network, who are the two co-conveners of this conference, processed that information and arrived at a platform for the common good, which is going to be ratified at the convention and then taken to the platform committees, I believe, of both the major parties. So it's really a look of at how to apply our faith to the actual challenges that we're facing as a country right now. And again, there are things like war and healthcare and the environment, you know, some real crucial concerns of this century.
Well, Chris Corzine, we want to thank you again for joining us and wish you luck with this book and with the conference, and hopefully you can come back again soon.
Thanks a lot, Tim. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine podcast. Just a reminder that you can respond to our podcast at our site, americamagazine.podbean.com, and we will post those and read some of them on the air as well. You can also go to that site to subscribe to our podcast via iTunes or other MP3 services. I want to thank Bill McGarvey for providing the music for this week's show. You can learn more about him at billmcgarvey.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.